morning. This is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We're here every Saturday morning right here on News Talk 870. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 396-0577 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I always like to thank John for hosting and everybody here at the station for making this show work. John, how are you this week?
Keeping busy.
You're busy, huh? That pre-summer craziness, right?
Mm-hmm. See, I'm nodding my head to the people that are listening.
Yeah,
hear the marbles rattling?
Absolutely. And we have with us in studio our resident in-house lending specialist, Mr. Tom Coyne with Umpqua. Tom, how are you doing?
You know, we're fantastic. We're just cranking away right now and had to win this last week, which I don't love, but weather's looking nice and everything's good.
Yeah, it's been kind of, you know, we got really hot and then cooled off a little bit, but we're just kind of in that, pre-summer grind where it seems like just kind of totally rocking things out there in the market. And we always like to start off with our crazy celebrity real estate story. And how about this one? We've got in Brooklyn, one of the iconic Brooklyn brownstone row houses that you see there. And there's one for sale right now that says that Jackie Robinson actually used to live in this house.
Hmm.
So the previous owner was apparently had lived there for 60 years and had a relationship with Robinson. And so talk about some history. We just don't quite get that exact same type of history here in the Tri-Cities.
No, we do not.
Now, also, we don't have the $2.8 million price tag that house is listed for, but very, very cool, like original ornate woodwork and just very, very classic type, New York type looking house.
So. You know, I like how people, they just will stretch as far as they need to try to make a little extra money.
Yeah.
Jackie Robinson stopped by one time and had a cup of coffee here.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I guess it's interesting to look at those things and say the history of the home. And we just don't we don't get that as much around here. Every now and then we'll have one house or so that might have some historical relevance. But being kind of a relatively newer in the century type area, the history of the home is not as big as we see in some of these iconic places for sure. But what we do have is still a crazy hot real estate market. And we always like to take a national news story and pair it with a local news story. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners, as they've been hearing us say on the show for the last 3 or 4 months, it's always fun to see it in a different medium come out. And there was a huge article this last week, on Sunday in the Tri-City Herald about just the low inventory that we've had here in the market. And they went through and definitely highlighted some of the reasons why, for instance, new build permits are up big time over last year because a lot of the builders are trying to meet that demand of the lower inventory. Another highlight from that article to mention that they talked about and that they quoted in there was just that the issue that you run into with appraisals. I believe they had Dave Redder from Windermere quoted in there just saying that, you know, it's hard for the appraisers in this market to keep up with the changing price points. And we had done a show about that a couple weeks ago where we just went over how that works and what happens in a really, really hot market like this. We've seen, and it varies. What's frustrating sometimes is it varies, you know, month to month. We've had houses where we had appraisals come in that killed a deal. Say a house was listed at 250 and we got an appraisal in at 220 and the buyer couldn't buy and the bank swore up and down the house wasn't worth that. So we had to go on and help that buyer find another house. But then you have, you know, say a month later, you have maybe a cash buyer come in or a buyer with a different appraiser and you see that house close at 250. And so it's not an exact science, and it can be frustrating at times, and those frustrating situations come up. And in this type of market, you're going to see more of that happening. So,
you know, Lance, my friends at Umpqua would probably just like me to keep my opinion on the matter to myself with regards to appraisals.
That's why you have me on the show.
That's true.
To say the things you can't say.
This is true.
So we'll just let Tom just stay over there out of trouble and be quiet. Uh-huh. But I do see a little grin on his face that I can describe on the show. So these are the types of situations and things that we run into. Big end of the day, what's best for our clients? How do we work them through those situations? But kind of nice to see, hear some of the other real estate agents out in the market, some of the other owners talking about those same types of issues that we're seeing in the marketplace, and very, very consistent message across the board. I thought it was a great article, reinforced a lot of the things we've been saying on the show. So nice to have some of that consistency there, and that's what other people are seeing in that market. So great job with the Tri-City Herald there. Thanks for reporting on that. And with that, we come into a topic that I love, something that we advocate a lot in our real estate transactions, but on the flip side, can become an issue in a hot market like we have. And to that is today's topic. That is what we do with the home inspections. And so we're advocating 100% of the time, unless a client tells us differently, and we can talk about those situations in a hot market where a client might tell us differently. But our general stance is that we're advocating for buyers in a purchase scenario to have a home inspection, to have a professional licensed Washington State home inspector come through the house and go through the house, just check out all the major systems, make sure things are working, check for termites, check your crawl space before someone proceeds to go through with a sale. So I wanted to get into a little bit about the general home inspection market. So in the Tri-Cities, on an average size home, 1,800 to 2,700 square feet in that range, to get a professional home inspection done, that's going to cost anywhere, depending upon the inspector you use and the add-ons and different things they do, that's going to cost usually somewhere between $375 and $500. Now, taking a step back before we go to doing that, how do we get to the home inspection in the first place? When you're with your buyer's agents, you find the house you like, you write up your offer, and part of that offer, a very generally accepted contingency in our local market, is that here is our offer, but it's contingent upon our satisfactory review of a home inspection within 10 days of mutual acceptance. So once everybody's agreed on price, terms, closing date, then in that first 10 days, the buyer needs to have ordered their home inspection, completed their home inspection, and then communicated either satisfaction or dissatisfaction with the results of that to the seller. Now, one thing to note, and one of the ways that this affects Tom on his end is, Tom, I know generally you guys are a little bit on hold as far as ordering your appraisal until we know about the home inspection. What's going on there with that?
Well, the appraisal tells us the value of your house, and the inspection tells you what could be wrong with the house. Now, when you order an appraisal, you're on the hook to pay for that appraisal as soon as we order it and the appraiser goes out there. So we like to delay having the appraiser out there until the inspection's done in case anything comes up that I call a deal killer and you don't want to proceed with the purchase. Now, Lance, it's a little bit different story right now because we've been seeing appraisals take 2 to 3+ weeks. And so lately, we have been ordering the appraisal at the same time that we're starting the transaction and letting the clients know if something comes up on the inspection, let us know right away and we'll cancel this appraisal request. But if we're not doing that, we may not be meeting those closing dates.
Tom, that's good information. And that second point you brought up there, that's why I always love doing the show with you, is, you know, you're managing some risk there. Mm-hmm. And with the client's best interest in mind, you're paying $500 to get a home inspection done. And then if something goes wrong there, you're already out that money anyway. But I always tell people that's good money spent when you're making the largest financial investment of your life. If you have to cancel that deal because of the inspection, that might be the best $500 you ever spent. On top of that, yeah, we don't want to incur another $500 to $700 in an appraisal unless we know for sure that you're moving forward from the inspection. So great, great point from Tom on the lending side there. Now, into that home inspection, you know, a lot of times people will ask us the question, what are the inspectors looking for? What is the scope of the inspection and the type of things that they're trying to find and information to convey to the buyer? So Very often, you will see home inspections in the Tri-Cities rank items that they're inspecting. They will usually rank those as acceptable, marginal, not inspected, not present in certain homes, or defective. And so a lot of times people will say, not inspected. Well, that's weird. I'm paying a home inspector to inspect the house. What do you mean not inspected? Well, things happen sometimes. For instance, sometimes we sell homes in January. We don't just stop selling homes in January. Mm-hmm. People still move in January. Well, if you have a snowstorm and you get 2 feet of snow and it's on top of the roof, the home inspector can't inspect the roof. And so that's a strange situation, you know, that sometimes people, you know, don't really think about is, oh, you're right. He can't get up there on the roof. It's icy and snowy and you can't see the shingles anyway. So a lot of times you're doing the best you can with what weather and Mother Nature is allowing. But there's times when a home inspector comes out and inspects the majority of the house, but they can inspect the roof from the top. You know, now they maybe they can get in the attic and pay a little more attention to the sheeting below to see what type of stuff is there. But those are the types of things that would fall under that not present. Acceptable is obviously an item or a system that's performing in its intended function at the time of the inspection. And so if something is acceptable, then that's how the inspector is rating it. So I always think it's, you know, a good idea to give some real life examples. So I printed off an inspection report and a summary from a recent inspection we had, just to give people an idea of the type of things that the home inspectors would. I mean, this is real life stuff. This was on a house that was built in around the 1980 range, and so these are some of the things that can come up. One of the things that comes up right here off the summary: rubber flashings on plumbing vent pipes are cracked and deteriorated. Recommend evaluation and repair or replacement by a roofing professional. So you have the plastic venting pipes that come out your roof. What they have is basically a rubber washer or seal that goes down over that pipe and then lets any water that drips down there shed out onto the shingles.
I've seen that on our roof.
Yeah. Well, what happens is it gets to be 112 degrees, you know, for all of July or August. Let's hope not quite as bad as last year. Mm-hmm. And then it gets to be, you know, 10 degrees in the winter. Well, you do that for 7, 8, 9, and especially a house that was 1980, 25 years. And those vent boots get cracked. And so now when it rains and we do have snow, then the water can run right down that tube into the house. So that's something we see called out a lot on home inspections. And it's one of those maintenance items that you kind of overlook. I mean, you're not up on your roof very often. You might put some Christmas lights up there and stuff, and you're usually so concerned and behind on getting the freaking lights up. It's not like you have a lot of time to be checking out your rubber roof vents, but that's one of those items to definitely look for. Another one that comes up, we see on the exterior a lot. This was right off the same inspection report. Gaps in siding joints should be properly caulked and sealed, and then minor deterioration of siding boards present on the east side. Siding boards in the Tri-Cities a lot, especially the lower boards near the bottom of the siding, will start to deteriorate. What happens a lot of times is sometimes, let's say even in new construction, that the bottom side, that last bottom piece of siding, when the house gets sprayed with paint, it doesn't always get, you know, bent over and sprayed up and sealed on that bottom side. If it's not properly sealed and you have your irrigation water too close to your house, and who's kidding who? It's the Tri-Cities, right? You can have your irrigation water 3 feet from the house and the wind can be blowing and it, you know, blows that right onto the siding. Well, if it's not painted properly, a lot of times some of that siding can wick up that water. It expands and it starts to get a little bit of rot on the bottom. Very, very common item that we see on the home inspection report. Another thing that we see happen more often than not, and I know this is crazy, but right off of this one was bathroom exhaust fan venting directly into the attic, not the exterior of the house. And I know it seems crazy, but this even happens in new construction, right? Because a lot of times those are two different subcontractors. So the fan itself might be installed by say an electrician or they come through and finish. Whereas the piping and ducting might be installed by HVAC. Well, sometimes what happens is they get it fitted for the fitting and the fan, but don't finalize connecting the duct work. You have to go back up in the attic and connect that duct work to the exterior of the house. So every time you're taking a shower, you know, and a lot of moisture in that bathroom, and you're running that fan, if it's not vented to the outside, it's just blowing that moisture up into the attic. And, you know, roofing materials and shingles, we try to keep moisture out of attics.
Now, Lance, this is a perfect example of why you get an inspection on new construction even.
Yeah, because that's exactly one of the spots and times that it can happen. And you stole my thunder with one of my points, Tom. But that was exactly one of the points I'd written down, as people say, yeah, but I don't need a home inspection on new construction. We're going to have a walkthrough with the builder, and they have a warranty. So if there's anything there, they'll find it, right? Well, not exactly. Because on that walkthrough, you know, I've been to a lot of walkthroughs with buyers and contractors, and I can't remember one where we all got up into the attic and, you know, walked around up there. It's just not a part of those walkthroughs. So, yeah, your home inspector would be somebody that checked that in a walkthrough. And a lot of times it's really good to have a home inspector. They can use these summary sheets to come into a new construction house at the end. And there's always a punch list. The builder has a punch list to finish up the house, but it's nice to have a punch list of things that were missed or unfinished so that when you do get that house, those items get corrected, or at least at a minimal documented, so that you have something to show the builder in those situations. So, Tom, as we wrap up this first segment, that was a great, great point. Are you recommending home inspections on new construction houses? Absolutely, we are for our buyers. And when we come back from the break, we're going to talk to Tom about some of the lending and then go over a few other fantastic and crazy things we've seen at home inspections.
Right here on News Talk 870.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We've been going over some local news stories and then talking about the importance of doing a home inspection on properties that you're purchasing. There's a lot of opinions out there. There's people out there that sometimes don't think you need it on new construction, that maybe don't think you need it on a property you're going to flip or do. But through all the years and all the things I've seen, you know, we just always recommend a home inspection, a licensed home inspector that's been through these situations and seen these things. I personally fix up and flip houses myself also. And even on ones that I know are in bad condition and have issues, I still have a home inspector go through, because if he finds termites or a hidden issue that I don't know about, that could be a $10,000, $15,000, $25,000 problem that they find. And when you're making such a large investment like that, that $500 for the home inspection, I just believe is a very prudent thing to do. So before we wrap up with some awesome, crazy stories of things we've seen at home inspections, Tom, what's going on over there in the lending world?
Well, Lance, we're talking about what you should do, and that's getting a home inspection. But I also want to talk about what you shouldn't do when you're getting a home loan. We've run into some situations here recently, and I think it's always good to kind of refresh our listeners who might be out there starting to get financing on things you should try to avoid if you're going to be getting a home loan. The first is, don't buy a new car, charge up existing accounts, really increase your debt in any way. Now, depending on how close your debt to income is, and your lender may not even relay this to you on how close it is as far as being approved or not approved, but it could affect your loan approval if you charge up an account or go out and get a new pickup. And likely the bank doesn't find out about it until right at the end. One of the very last things we do before we send documents out after underwriting is refresh the credit report to make sure there's no new accounts or the debts are all in line with what they were originally. And so this is something that would come up right at the end, and all of a sudden you're thinking you're moving in 3 days and maybe you're not. So definitely try to avoid charging up new accounts, Lance. I know you've run into this before.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And it's hard too. And first time home buyers, listen up, because it's very popular to do this. And sometimes maybe you're stretching a little bit to buy your first house, but you go and you see Tom, you get pre-approved. You're so excited about buying your new house and you really want to be ahead of the game and ready. So you run down to Home Depot and you order the washer, dryer, and refrigerator. And you put it on like a Home Depot, you know, no payments for 24 months, mm-hmm. Credit account at Home Depot. And actually, by doing that at that moment in time prior to closing, it could have, you might not be able to get the house.
Well, not only that, as far as debt to income goes, but a new account can hurt your credit scores too. So if you could just delay that until after you're into your house, that's going to be the better way to go. Now, another thing that I have run into this is don't quit your job or change it to a different industry.
Right.
Again, right at the same time we're refreshing your credit report, we do what's called a verbal verification of employment. We have to make sure you're still at the same job that you were when we started your loan. And I've had it where we call and they say, no, actually, they no longer work here. Now, fortunately, in this last situation that came up, we were able to update pay stubs and get an offer letter, and everything worked out fine. But that's not necessarily all the case, because what if the client was switching from a salaried position to maybe a commission position? Well, commission generally will require a two-year history of receiving that. So don't change employment without first talking to your lender or your loan officer to make sure it's not going to have a negative impact on your loan. Now, another thing, and this probably causes the most talks I have with clients through processing, and it has to do with bank statements. So we always have to get 2 months bank statements, and any deposits that are out of the ordinary, we have to source, document them, and paper trail them. Now, some people think, geez, I have the money. Isn't that good enough? You know, it's in there. I have enough to close. What's the problem? And I go back and tell people, hey, you know what? Lending's gotten a lot tougher in the last 10 years. But you know, Lance, for you, for me, and for everyone out there, that is a good thing. Because if it wasn't, then we could be susceptible to fall right back in the same stuff we went through in 2008. So because lending is more difficult, there's certain things that are going to come up that we just have to work through. And you may not like it, but at the end of the day, you're asking a stranger, basically, for, say, $300,000 to go buy a house.
Yeah, I always tell people that. I'm like, you don't have the $300,000. They do.
Right.
And so if you did and somebody was coming to you to say, hey, can I have that $300,000? You might ask a lot of questions.
Absolutely.
And so I know sometimes it feels like it goes overboard, but Tom, I'm right there with you. Is, you know, this is a big deal. And I think sometimes we make it like not a big deal or transactional, like, oh, it's just a transaction. We need to get it done. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, $100,000, $200,000, $300,000.
A lot of money.
Money that people are transferring over to you. And so, hence all the questions.
Yep, absolutely. So if you're, let's say you have accounts at Bank X and Bank Y and Bank Z, and you're going to get them all into Bank Z, and then that's where you're going to draw your funds out of, wait to do all those transfers until after we've gone through your bank statements and we have all that done and out of underwriting. If you start transferring money around, we have to source where those transfers came from and where they went to, and this can just become a headache for you. So if you have questions before you start moving money around, talk with your lender and say, how is this going to affect me? This ties right into what I was just talking about, and that's don't accept cash gifts, because we have to document gifts. And there's no way to prove where cash came from. So leading up to the transaction, this is why you'd want to go in and get pre-approved ahead of time. And so you and your lender, or you and me, we could sit down and talk about your situation, and you can get all your finances in order prior to leading up in the months leading up to wanting to buy a house. So that way you don't run into these challenges. Here's another one. This sounds like common sense, but don't forget to pay your bills, even right, the ones that are in disputes. Because again, we're going to refresh that credit report. Maybe you're thinking, oh, I'm just going to skip this car payment this month, so I have a little bit extra for down payment or for that fridge. Well, we're going to see that late payment right at the end. And you don't want anything that can affect your approval. So continue to pay your accounts. And if you have an account that maybe you were planning on disputing or getting ready to, you don't want to dispute that account in the months leading up to getting a home loan, because there's new rules that have come out that if you have a disputed account, you either have to have the dispute resolved or the account needs to be at a zero balance. So avoid disputing accounts until after your home loan's done, or do it well in advance. Now, last one, I think we kind of touched on this, was just the random and undocumented deposits to your bank account. Really just make sure that anything that's going into your bank, that you have a good paper trail and a source for that, because the bank's going to ask for it. Long story short, your lender is your best friend when you're buying a home. Call them if you have any questions about, could this hurt me? Even if you don't think it might, just say, hey, is this going to affect me if I do this? And that's going to avoid all the challenges and pitfalls you could run into when financing your loan.
Tom, those are great ones, and they make me cringe a little bit when you say them, because every single one of those we've been through, you know, over the course of, you know, 16, 17 years. And it's just, it's tough. And so I love that you're giving people an advance warning. I know you're chatting with your clients when they come in about these situations, but you know, sometimes people do stuff you were not expecting, like way out of left field. And so that's always very, very challenging, but that is great advice. Yeah. You try not to do anything new or change anything once you're in that 30-day window.
Well, and I know that you've run into clients that are getting ready to go out shopping for houses, and you ask them, have you gotten your pre-approval done yet? And they say, well, no, I'll just wait till I find a house. These are the reasons you want to go in ahead of time. Just in case you have anything, special circumstances like this, you get those done and out of the way before you find that home.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Because sometimes you can fix those things as opposed to trying to do it under pressure. Maybe you lose negotiating power. Maybe you end up, you know, worst case scenario is you lose the deal. So good things to look out for there. Another big thing on home inspections. Back to that home inspection, the type of things that we're looking for during the home inspection and the type of things that a lot of times are asked for in repairs. And here's a big one, and that is just electrical. And for instance, off of this random report that I pulled out, one of it says knockouts missing in the electrical box need to be properly plugged. So a lot of times there's the blank sections of the unused portion of the electrical panel. Well, obviously they don't like those to be wide open and exposed.
That's scary.
You know, a kid runs up there and jams a screwdriver or something in there. You know, it's probably not going to be great. Another thing that we find all the time is what they call flying splices in the industry. And that means like, oh, you wanted to add a little light in the family room. So, you know, you kind of understand how electricity works. So you went up there, you cut the wire, you got your people's, the part-time electrician's favorite wing nuts, your wire nuts. And so they take the wire nuts and they wire a new section of wire over and you just have this open splice up there. Well, those have to properly be secured in junction boxes. There's rules and regulations that have to be followed that. Now, I will tell you, absolutely, electrical, hands down, the biggest items called out, some of the most dangerous, you know, too, are I built a little storage shed in the back corner. Well, you know, my brother's uncle's cousin is actually an electrician with the union and works out at Hanford. So if you buy him, you know, a 12-pack of beer, he'll come wire this thing up for you this weekend. Well, the problem is the way that's done versus done to city code, et cetera, is vastly different. And the problem is a lot of times what happens is maybe someone trenches over. They don't trench deep enough. Next thing you know, you pour a cement pad, you know, over that thing. And so when you do that, now all of a sudden, it's you can't prove how deep it is. It's hard to get at. We see all kinds of things like this done. Improperly wired sub panels, garages, shops, outbuildings. Like, it makes me cringe if I see electrical out there.
I got a buddy, and he is a fantastic electrician. He built a shop, and for years he had electrical cord, like an extension cord, run out to the shop. It was all beautifully wired inside, had great LED lights, but it's being run from an extension cord that's just plugged into his house, and he is an electrician.
Yeah, and I see these type of things all the time, so I know that is a true story. So yes, extension cords used as permanent wiring. Another big one, right along with your example, is people after the fact say, oh, you know what? I want to put a garage door opener on this door to my shop, but I didn't put an outlet up there where the garage door opener will. So I'll go ahead and install it, and then I'll just use a staple gun, and I'll staple an extension cord up on the ceiling to that opener and plug it in over here.
That doesn't work?
That's not going to work, not to code. So see those type of things all the time. Something really to consider cleaning up when you're putting a house on the market, looking to sell. Also, if any of those repairs need to be made, the process comes in. A buyer looks at all of this. Then a buyer looks at that report, and they either decide some of the items are acceptable, or they're going to ask the seller to fix maybe the life safety issues, maybe the big ones for them. So the buyer will then make a request to the seller. Now, here's the thing about our inspection addendum. The seller doesn't have to agree to those repairs. The seller could agree to some of the items if, say, it's reasonable. Maybe the seller looks at it and says, gosh, this electrical stuff is life safety. I'm going to fix that. But the siding where the water got on the edge of the house, yeah, it's defective, but I'm just not interested in matching the paint and redoing all that. I'm just going to leave that to the buyer, or I'm going to counter back. and say, you know what, instead of replacing that, I don't have time because I'm packing and trying to move, I'll give you $200 credit and you can fix it after closing. So there's this renegotiation that happens at the point of that inspection. And one of the things that we're very careful about is telling people when it has to do with electrical or plumbing and you're making those requests, a lot of times we're asking for licensed, bonded contractors to make those repairs. Because a lot of times you'll put that request over and a seller will be like, oh, I'll take care of this. I'll get it repaired. I've been meaning to fix that forever. And once again, their buddy comes over who sort of knows what he's doing. And then you're in a spot where those repairs weren't made in, as our language states, a commercial reasonable manner. So there's a lot of intricacies with how those statements are worded, how that negotiation goes, and following up on those situations. So the home inspection process and how that gets done is a big, big deal. And just kind of for a little bit of fun, but also cringing a little bit, just some of the big ones we've seen before. I've been on a home inspection, brand new construction, with a major gas leak in the attic. So fitting was loose to the gas heat. The gas heat was in the attic, and the gas heat was running, and there was a leak at one of the fittings. It didn't get fully tightened. So the home inspector opens up the attic hatch, climbs up on his ladder. Holy smokes, there's gas. He has a sniffer meter, sticks it up there. Sure enough, there's active gas leak in the attic.
Everybody out of the house.
Yeah, so, jeez. You know, here's one of those things. You don't get a home inspection. You move into that house. What could happen there, you know? So that's one of the big ones. Another one I saw that was crazy was somebody had a gorgeous remodel done on their master bath, put in a jacuzzi tub in the corner, tiled it all. Absolutely gorgeous remodel. Home inspector opens up the hatch to go into the crawl space, puts his head down there and says, what the heck? And he puts his head back up. He goes, Lance, he goes, it's like a jungle down here in the corner. There's like vegetation and vines growing. He goes, stuff grows when there's like a lot of water and something. I wonder what happened. He crawls under there. The remodel contractor had not hooked up the drain from the master bathtub to the plumbing of the house. So they had installed it, put it all in, but had not gone down and connected. So when the person was done with their bath, they would pull the drain, and it would just all flow into the crawl space. Now, the problem was they didn't use that bath every day, so it would dry a little bit, and then it was never a big enough problem that they were alerted to it. But over the course of 2 years, that was plenty of moisture to grow a lot of vegetation under there.
Isn't that something?
And, you know, I bet that bathtub drained really quick, though. I mean, I bet they were like, man, this thing drains great.
There's no fish and hair out of that one.
Yeah. No. So those are just a couple of those little examples. And, man, I could write a book of all the different things that we've seen. And so, you know, I think, you know, I have a very good perspective over that after, you know, thousands of house sales that were very, you never know what you're going to run into. I always think I've seen it all. And then, you know, tomorrow or the next day, I'll see something else in that situation. So if you have any questions about this, we have some amazing home inspectors in the Tri-Cities, a bunch of guys that do just a fantastic job. We've had Ron Shank on the show before from NPI, and there's a lot of great options out there. And he's, you know, in my opinion, you know, just one of the best out there. So if you need referrals in this situation, if you have questions about that, please go to kenmoreteam.com, shoot us a message. We'd be glad to help you out with that. Tom, you brought up some great points on, you know, pre-qualifying, being ready to write offers. That article that we led with in the show talked about needing to be ready to write an offer sometimes within hours, minutes of seeing a house in our current state. So to be ready and be pre-approved and check their credit and what they can buy, how can people get a hold of you at Umpqua?
You can go apply online anytime at tomcoinhomeloans.com.
Thank you so much, and we will be right back here next week.
Right here on News Talk 870.